listeners, welcome to episode 151 of Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour. I am your host, the titular Stace, and joining me in my virtual parlour of imaginary cakes and fake coffees and other beverages that are available is the absolutely delightful Keith Bloomfield. Hello, dear.
Hello. What a wonderful intro. I stumbled over my words there.
Thank you. I stared vehemently at my notepad as I did it because I don't like doing intros. They make me feel weird. I feel like I should have like a soundboard or something so that when I go, here's my guest, there's not just like dead silence. So you don't just go like, hello, yes, it's me. And there's like no reaction because that makes me feel uncomfortable. But I also feel like it might be facetious if I clapped.
I'm quite happy to have a round of applause from anybody really at my age. It's like...
There you go, a little one.
Thank you.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Apart from the fact that just before we started recording, and because it's been so long since I've done anything remotely remote, and I was setting up my audio interface, and then there's like one particular lead that I needed to plug everything in, and I couldn't find it, and I was having a panic attack before we started. It's like, why is that one of these old school square to USB leads? It's like, who's got one of those? Who's got a printer that even still has one of those? But luckily, I managed to find it with about seconds to spare.
Oh, so splendid. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
If it makes you feel any better, I was about 2 minutes away from texting you to say I was going to be a couple of minutes late because my stomach decided to rebel against the roast dinner that I made earlier. I think I put too much mint sauce on it is a lesson I learned about my bowels. Nobody else needed to learn that lesson. Oh, so
it seems fancy having a roast dinner on a Tuesday as well.
Well, you see, that was purely because we were supposed to have the roast dinner on Sunday, but then neither of us could be bothered to cook in anything. And then Rich was like, hey, what if we did it on a work day? Because then we'll already be annoyed and pissed off because we're working. But we'll both be working from home, so we can like grumble downstairs and grumble put the oven on. And one of us can like go back downstairs in a bit once it's preheated and grumbly put the chicken in. And so that's what we did. And then it was really good because you got a midweek roast out of it.
Sounds lovely. Because you must be very civilised, because I haven't had my tea yet. I'm not going to have it for another couple of hours.
Why?
Because I'm on a weird schedule. I don't eat. my day is so weird. I have my breakfast at like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mad.
And I have my lunch at about 2-ish. And then I have my supper, tea, at like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the evening.
If I ate at 9 o'clock in the evening, I don't think I would get to sleep before about 1 a.m. Like, genuinely. Which is actually not that much different from my actual life because I've got terrible insomnia. But, oh man, wouldn't sleep be good?
It is very nice. When you get it. I try to make up for it at the weekends.
Well, see, I try and do that, but then I also feel like I make my weekends too short because I've slept in for half of it and I'm like, what am I doing? Soak up that non-work weekend. Soak it up. The past couple of weeks I've been using up a bit of my it's March and you've got to use all your annual leave before the end of March before your new batch kicks in April. So I've had a couple of random Wednesdays off and I've got to say that's been really good fun. Because you only have to do 2 days of work, so it feels like nothing. And then you have a day off and you go to the cinema and you watch Dune 2. And then you come back and you eat a bonehead, obviously, as you do when you're in Birmingham. And then you come home and you read a book and you watch another film, probably. And then you have another 2 days and it doesn't really feel like anything. And then it's the weekend. It's so good.
It's how it should be all the time. We should have this 4-day working week thing. I think that's the future.
I did say to my boss that I really liked having the Wednesdays off. And she was like, well, we could do that for you if you'd like. You'd only need to work about 3 extra hours every other day. And I was like, fuck off.
No, it's fine. I'll just take the odd Wednesday.
Yeah. I was like, here's the thing, right? So with me and my working is I'm a person who has put like basically all of, I believe my only value is to be useful to other people. Let's not psychoanalyze that. It's a bad thing. I'm very aware. But that means that when I'm not being like productive at work, it makes me feel like a bad human being. And I said to her the other day, I was like, I can barely do 7.5 hours days and still feel productive past sort of like the sort of five and a half hour point. So there's like a good 2 hours of every day where I feel like a bad human being. So I was like, there's categorically no way I'm adding an extra 3 hours to that. That's nice of you to offer to let me have Wednesdays off, but that's not going to happen.
Nice.
I've had a couple of goes on the Euro Millions, I'm not gonna lie.
It never works. I've gone through those websites that go guaranteed numbers that are going to win it for you. And you go, no, it never works.
Oh, I don't even do that. I just lucky dip it, which is insane because you should keep having the same numbers because eventually you would think they would happen, but they don't.
Eventually, that might work in Wordle. Yeah. And your start word might be the one that gets you the first word. I don't know if it works for the lottery because there must be billions of people that do it all the time and don't never win.
What I want to know is how come I haven't befriended a winner yet? Anyway, this is ostensibly a podcast about pop culture and not about how sad I am that I'm not a Euro millionaire.
Roast dinners and lotteries.
Oh, mate. Weekday roast dinners, they're a bonus, man.
Sounds good. I think I should do it.
I think you should. Although I've got to say, I have been spoilt for roast dinners because I keep going to the Wolf in Birmingham, do like a mean Sunday roast. And like, okay, not to get onto my electric cinema high horse this early in the episode, but like me and Rich had quite a nice little thing going there where they used to do like a rewind thing on a Sunday. So they'd show like an old movie on like at about like 2 p.m. So perfect timing for me and Rich to go to the Wolf, have a giant fucking roast dinner that's delicious, have a little post-roast stroll into the city centre so that we feel like we've worked off maybe one of the roast potatoes. And then sit down and have a lovely, lovely film time. And they've ruined it for us now because it just sort of spectacularly, unceremoniously closed, which...
Yeah. But you had said you had a good time at the Everyman.
I did have a good time at the Everyman, but... Rich and I, as I've mentioned before, are incredibly lazy people, and the Everyman is just slightly further away and slightly more awkward in terms of bus stoppage.
Because
we were having the same conversation about the Mockingbird, we're like, oh, but dig the phone, like I've got to use my legs. can't walk to Digbeth from the Wolf, can we? Like, that's far too far.
They need to get that tram going and then you'd be all right.
Oh god, that mystical tram, that mystical Digbeth tram. This is not a podcast about Birmingham gripes, but I tell you what, if it was, yeah, I'd have a load of them.
We shouldn't get started on the Birmingham public transport as anybody that's ever listened to me on the other thing that I do when I used to have all of my bus traumas broadcast across the nation.
Honestly, what annoys me the most, and I will talk about pop culture in a minute, but I've got to get this off my chest. What annoys me the most about buses is that when they're on time and they run properly, they're really good. Like, I love being able to get on a bit of transport where I don't have to be the one worried about driving, and I can just read a book or play a Pokemon Go and just get to my destination or relatively close to it, and I don't have to like be the one getting all road rage if there's a traffic jam or whatever. I'll just be like, it's the driver, I don't care. But the problem is, that's very rarely the case, and that's very annoying. Since they've tried to start dragging everybody back into the office on a more frequent basis, I've been sort of having to deal with public transport more, and I'm like, why isn't the bus here? Why is the bus here, but it's just sitting still at the stop before mine, but it's 3 minutes late? Like, why is it there, but it's also a mirage? Drives me mad. Anyway, yeah, shut up about buses, Stace. Don't get us started.
We can do a whole different podcast, start a different podcast about that.
Maybe we should. I did joke once about starting a podcast called I'm Not Having That, and it's all just about me getting cross at things.
I love it. I love that idea. That's brilliant. The title is fantastic. Yeah, I'm like to be a regular reporter.
One of my initial episodes was going to be Americans having cheese in a can. I'm not having that. I'm not having that. How dare you desecrate cheese in such a manner?
I know you do a lot of podcasts already, but you have to do this one. I must have this podcast.
It'll be like a little 10-minute thing, and it's just a rant. Anyway, better get one of my artist friends on the logo for that. Let's talk about pop culture. I'm going to be a lovely... gracious host and pass the floor over to you first.
To me? Okay.
To you.
Well, I don't know if you've been kind of, do you have Apple TV Plus?
I have Apple TV. I don't know if it's Plus or not.
Plus. Well, I've just started watching a show that I kind of wasn't sure whether I was going to like it because I kind of saw it. I've been watching Our Flag Means Death, which I absolutely love.
Oh,
which is a brilliant show. Absolutely love it. And then they were trailering the completely made up adventures of Dick Turpin, which I was kind of a bit like, it could be terrible, could be good. And it's turned out to be absolutely brilliant.
So splendid.
We've just, I think, 4 episodes in at the moment, and it's Noel Fielding. The best thing is like everybody that's in it, it's period, but basically everybody's just playing themselves. So Noel Fielding is playing Dick Turpin,
of course.
Just been Noel Fielding. So it's kind of like some kind of like ancestor of the Boosh. It's like somehow Dick Turpin is related to Vince in the Mighty Boosh, and they've had Greg Davis on, and basically just being Greg Davis. And it's hilarious, and I'm loving it. And I'm thinking, I do miss occasionally like having really good British comedies, because I think the only thing I watch regularly is Taskmaster, which I find really funny for some reason. And but this stick, I was thinking, it's going to be a bit trashy, isn't it, and a bit poor and a bit badly written, but it's turned out to be absolutely delightful, and I'm loving it. So if you have got Apple TV, I think you should give it a try, because it's really great. It's not as poignant and beautiful as Our Flag Means Death can be, but it's hilariously funny, and I'm loving it.
Oh, that's good. I was talking to Rich about comedy the other day, because I can't remember what what got us. We're probably, you know, old man shouts at clouding something. That's how usually we end up talking about, like, it in my day comedy was it was because I was reading Rick Mayall's autobiography, and it was shit, and I was really upset about it. Because it's written under the sort of character of like the Rick Mayall. Yeah. So it's all about like how shaggable he is, and how he's got all the birds, and like how after a chapter of that is really funny, but like after about 5 you're like, where's any of the actual interesting things I want to read about? But we were talking about comedy then, because neither of us really watch an awful lot of like, you know, like sitcoms or anything like that anymore, because the British ones seem to be like really almost twee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you still of things like Bottom and The Young Ones and like, or like really absurdist shit? And I'm like, where's all that like nonsense gone? So yeah, maybe I will check that out. Although I never did watch The Mighty Boosh, so maybe that's something I should check out first, just in case.
I don't think I
know Noel Fielding from anything other than panel shows and the occasional moment in the IT Crowd.
Yeah.
So I think
if you like absurdist stuff, that was brilliant with The Boosh, because the first season's all set in a zoo, which is just kind of weird and wonderful. And then each season after that progressively gets weirder and weirder, and you just go, this is brilliant. But I think the nice thing is, I think the guy that did a lot of those, Paul King, went on to do Paddington, and he's just done the Wonka movie. So he's got a lot of... I think they had a film called The Bunny and the Bull, I think it was called, which is another weird ass movie. It's not as weird as the freaky one with the gorillas and them throwing poo at each other, which is just called Arg, I think. I think that's got Noel Fielding in and Julian Barrett. That's a really bizarre movie if you've never seen it. It's just totally crazy. But The Boosh is great. Yeah, definitely watch that. That's really cool. It's been a long time since I've watched it. I'll have to watch it again at some point.
Yeah.
Because I like doing the little bits, like crimping. Sometimes you just find yourself in the street and you just think, I'm just going to do a bit of crimping while I'm waiting for the bus. I don't recommend it if there's other people around, because they just think you've gone insane. But it is quite like, you just kind of start doing the little thing about, I'm waiting for the bus. Bus is going to come. Got my change. I'm not going to do any more this one. But it's great. You should do it. When you're talking about comedies, I kind of watch a few American ones.
Mm.
So I think I'm watching Abbott Elementary, which is kind of okay for a kind of sitcom.
Yeah.
But it took me a while to get into it. I quite like Extraordinary, which is the kind of superhero one where the lead character hasn't got any powers. And they have a character in it called Jizzlord, which kind of tells you the tone they're going for.
I don't know how I feel about that. So bearing in mind, I mean, I know this is like not a, well, it's sort of a comedy, but also mostly it's not. But I've got a weird thing about things that feel a bit too edgelordy. So I don't like The Boys, even though my husband really likes it. Because to me, it seems like, how many times can we say the word cunter? Look at me. He said it again. Oh, his dick's out. And I'm like, God, are we doing this again? Oh, look, his willy exploded. Like, what? Come on now.
Did you ever see the comics? Because I didn't really like the comics. Yeah, the show, I think, that's pretty good.
The comics I couldn't get into. Somebody, I think it might have been Iz McAuliffe, who I used to do the Comic Racks podcast with, tried to get me to read it once because she really liked it. But I'm not a big fan of like it. I don't even know what my own boundaries are for this, because I will happily watch like a slasher movie and there's blood literally everywhere, like, you know, like a fucking volcano just out of every orifice, and like I'll be like, cool, this is a good film, this 5 stars on Letterboxd. But then I'll see something like The Boys and I'm like, what? Or like one of my problems with Saltburn, which I don't think I talked about too much on the podcast because I knew I'd get myself all riled up. But one of my problems with that was that even though it was made by a woman, it felt very much like, cool, I'm an edgy boy, mate. Oh, look at me, I'm doing a sex on the ground. I'm having sex with a recently buried corpse. Ha! And I was like, grow up, man. Jesus. Like, what are you doing? Like, come on. You could be better than this.
I wonder if it's our advancing years, Stacey. Not to say you're as advanced as I am, but I'm thinking maybe if I was like 13, I'd have thought The Boys was the greatest thing ever. And I know a lot of young people. I say young people. God, it makes me sound so old. I've just got my Zimmer frame out of just out of the side. But a lot of young people liked Saltburn, and I was kind of like, yeah, but kind of. I've been there before. It's like, yeah, you know what? I'll trade you a Saltburn, and I'll give you a Pink Flamingos. You know, if you want to do outrageous.
I won't watch that. I read about what was in that and I was like, that's never gracing my eyeballs. Absolutely never. It came up actually on the never seen list and they were like, should we put it on the list? I was like, no. Well, if you, it's just going to be an episode with Jenny and Lee if you do that, because I'm not going to watch
It's going to remain unseen. Stacey.
Yes, it will always remain unseen across my eyes. But Saltburn was such a weird one for me because like I really wanted to like it, especially because a lot of people had ragged on it. I'm a bit contrarian, right, occasionally. And so if I don't see a film immediately, I kind of want to go against the grain of what I really wanted to like Rebel Moon when I saw it, because everybody was going, this is the worst thing I've ever put in my eyeballs. So I was like, I'm going to love this. It's going to be my new favourite film. And then I watched it and I was like, no, it isn't. just immediately, nah, put it in the bin. Don't bother. Don't even try again later. Definitely not going to watch part two. Although I have a feeling my husband will, and then I'll end up watching it vicariously and being annoyed about it. But yeah, like that's one of the things that really annoyed me about Saltburn was that I really wanted to like it. But like Barry Keoghan's shit. Like he's really shit in it. And I'm like, he's supposed to be this like enigmatic, like worms his way into this family. It's not supposed to be, and I'm spoiling the bejesus out of this now, folks. It's not supposed to be obvious that he's doing things behind the scenes to like basically make people off themselves so that he can get the house to himself. He's playing the long game. And it was very obvious from the start exactly that was what he was trying to do. He isn't a very good actor in this film in particular. And I was just like, what are people seeing in this other than willies that I'm not understanding? That I'm like, I just don't. And then when it started doing that thing at the end where it was like showing you the previous scenes, like, oh, but look at it from the context now that you know that he was trying to get the house. And I was like, I already had that context. I was there. I was on that page. You don't have to worry about showing it to me again. Oh, what a stupid film. Anyway, you were talking about Dick Turpin.
which isn't stupid. And the only dick in it is the eponymous highwayman. Unfortunately, I don't think we've seen any nude bits yet. I don't think we have. It wouldn't surprise me if later on, because I'm fairly certain Noel Fielding likes to get his clothes off every so often. It seems to be a thing that I've noticed about his career. But I'm hoping that Julian Barrett turns up at some point, because they've got to do it. They've got to double up. But yeah, but they're releasing it weekly as well, which is nice. I'm not a binge person. I like to have my shows spread out so I can kind of savour them. And then get to the last episode and not watch it for weeks because I don't want it to be over.
Oh, that's adorable. I can't do that because I get too excited about... Well, firstly, I get excited about watching the final, and then also I get antsy about people ruining it for me on the internet, which is one of the reasons why I don't like when shows get dumped all at once, because I'm like, I don't have the time to, and all the inclination, if I'm honest. Like, if I'm going to sink, like, 8 hours into something, I want it to be to really, like, rock my socks off.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to. I don't know.
Yeah, I like to watch different things across a week. So rather than binge stuff, so in a night I might do a Dick Turpin, then I might do a Fargo, then I might do a kind of Extraordinary, then I might do a Reacher or something. So it's like, I like to mix my genres up, because I've, you know, I just like to savour stuff a little bit over time and let it settle in.
Yeah.
And kind of go, okay, I really like that.
I like the anticipation as well of, like, not knowing where it's going to go immediately, and, like, having that sort of, like, you know, theorising with Rich or whatever about, like, oh, you know, what's going to happen next? Unless you guess it and then you feel shit about it later because you've been diffuser.
When you can see it coming. And I'm also, I'm not a skip credits or intros, because it really annoys me when you get a show where basically the intro is just the word of the title on the screen. Lasts a while of about a second and a half, and yet it still comes up, skip intro. It's like, it'll take me longer to press the button than you're actually going to skip forward. What is that all
the,
about?
The thing that annoys me about skip intro and the skip the credits is a lot of the time it will appear like still during the cold open, or it will skip to a point a couple of seconds after the actual intro, and I'm like, I know I'm probably not going to have missed anything important, but that annoys me. And like, just watch it as it was intended. Streaming is one of those, it's like the internet to me, in that, like, on the one hand it's fucking phenomenal and I love it and I don't ever want it to go away, and on the other hand it's the bane of my life, because I'm like, why do you exist to just rile me up all the times with your 73 different services, all costing me £9 a month,
and there's just one show you want to watch.
Sorry. Mate, what me and Rich do sometimes is we'll be like, right, so there's three shows now on Apple that we want, but there's nothing on Paramount. So if we just fuck off Paramount and get Apple for 3 months or something, and then binge all them shows. Ugh,
yeah.
So stupid.
Because I think the only thing I'm watching on, well, the only thing I was watching on Paramount was Quantum Leap, which they've done the first season of, but they haven't put the second one up yet, which finished in America like weeks ago. And then I'm not sure, I don't know where Discovery is going to end up. And I'm kind of going, I've done the previous four, so I'm going to do this fifth one, regardless of what the quality is. And apparently it's supposed to be a bit better. But I'm like, is it going to be on Netflix? Is it going to be on Amazon? Or is it going to be on Paramount? Because it's like, it's all weird, because I think at one point Picard was on Paramount and on Amazon. And it was like, it was all really weird. I just put it in one place. I just want it in one place.
It's very annoying. One of my least favourite things, and then we will actually review some stuff and not just moan constantly about the state of the world at large. One of the things that bothers me is when they have like half of a thing. So like the reason that we got Paramount for a while was so I could watch Rise of the TMNT, but because I hadn't seen it before and the movie was coming out and I wanted to watch the movie. But as it turns out, there's only two seasons of that show, but Paramount in the UK only has one of them. And then in the US, Netflix has both series. In the UK, it just has the movie. There's no actual legal way to watch series two here in the UK at the moment, I don't believe, unless it's on come on Paramount since then. And it's got the first three seasons of the 87 Turtles show, but not the rest of it. There's 10 seasons. I don't know where the other seven are.
Why do that to us? We're fans, and if we can't buy it on Blu-ray or DVD or whatever it is, because it still really annoys me, I can't get The Amazing World of Gumball in a complete set, and it's like
Final Space has disappeared. I'm never going to see it again. Don't start you on Final Space.
Don't start us on Final Space, because I did drop. For months I went, I'm not paying £140 for the book. And then he put it, Olin Rogers put up the gift cards at Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, buy them for other people. And I went, no, I'm going to get a signed gift card from you for me for Christmas so I can get this book.
Brilliant.
So I've got to redeem that at some point. So it's like, I've got to redeem it, because I can't sit on a gift card that's cost me a fortune and not get the graphic novel. So I hope you don't do that. And that should be quite good, because I've been quite following him when he's been doing this Godspeed stuff, which is kind of cool, which I really like as well. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I backed it on Kickstarter because I was so up in up, because he launched that at such a good time for himself, because it was like all around the time when a lot of the cartoons that I really enjoy were just disappearing from streaming services forever, and they don't exist in physical media. So I was like, oh my God, I have to back this, because he's going to create a DVD of it. So like, I'll get to have it and it will be mine and it will be on my shelf and I can have it forever and it'll be fine. But oh my God, one of the most updated Kickstarters I've ever like. And on the one hand, that's great, because it's like so nice that you just know every step of the process. And he's been doing wonderful things as well, like sending over like animatics as they would do, or like test designs for characters and like little bits of test score and stuff. So that's really nice having those little tasty extra bits. But he does an update a week and I'm like, bloody Nora. It's been about 2 years. I'm like, just send me my t-shirt and my DVD when they're done, mate.
Oh, you went with the t-shirt as well?
I think I did, yeah. I was a bit flush at the time. I can't remember why. I think I've got a tax rebate.
That's money well spent. That's money well spent. I think he shipped out all the DVD, the Blu-rays. So they're on their way, which is kind of cool.
Hopefully, Roger comes soon, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm looking forward to that. And I hope he gets to get some investors in the kind of, I think the idea was to do a series, but I think because of the money, it might just end up being a feature, which is great. Mm. But it's like, it's a shame that creators have got to do that to kind of own their own work and make sure it's going to stay out there.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the things that I've been down. I mean, I went to see Dune and I didn't want to because it's Warner Brothers. And I was like, Warner Brothers, I want to see Coyote versus Acme before I see Dune. So give me that film and I'm going to boycott your rest. And it's like, oh no, but there's like, that's coming Dune out. And I think Furiosa is coming out later in the year, which is another one. I was like, stop putting films out I want to watch. But also put out the films that I want to watch that you have got still that I will give you money for, legit. I'll go to the cinema and I'll watch that. Then I'll buy the Blu-ray and then I'll buy the digital version because I'm crazy like that now. I'll buy physical releases and then buy the digital ones as well, so I don't have to get it off the shelf and put it in the video player. I've not got a lot, you know, Britain, but I've got it to give you if you want it for these things that I do want to watch.
It's the whole thing with Coyote versus Acme has been absolutely baffling. Like, I, in my head, it should be illegal to just waste everybody's time like that. Because, I was talking to my hubby about it, and it's not even a movie I care about. I never really used to watch Looney Tunes. I don't give even half of a shit. But I got so up in arms about it when they talked about it, because I was like, so many people have put their, like, so much time and effort and, like, you know, sweat into making this movie, and whether it's good or not, it doesn't matter. It should be seen. There's that effort shouldn't just get put in the bin so that, you know, Mr. fucking suity man at the top can have his tax whatever bollocks. Like, that's so shitty. It's so shitty. And it's driving me up the wall a bit as well, because eventually I think there will be a film that I'm like, no, I need to see this. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Warner Brothers should just follow the Sony example and just go, we'll just put it out.
We'll do anything. We don't even care.
We're going to make these things. We know they're terrible. And everybody that's in it, we know they're terrible. We're still going to put them out. But well, who cares?
What a wonderful segue into the fact that I watched Madame Web, didn't I? I don't know why I did this to myself. I do know it's because Rich said it can't be as bad as all that and put it on. And I was like, oh no, why have you, is this you trying to tell me you want a divorce? What's happening? Again, though, I kind of wanted to like it because everybody said it was shit. And I was like, no, come on, it can't be that bad. Are you all being a bit misogynistic? Is it because it's full of ladies and you've all just lost your mind? Because that can happen where people are like, Ghostbusters 2016 is categorically garbage. It isn't, mate. It's actually really fun. And it's much more a Ghostbusters movie than Afterlife. And I'll fight people on that. But anyway, that's a whole different podcast where people will get really cross at me. but yeah, no, Madame Web is genuine trash. And like, I can't fathom out. Not a single person in that movie feels like they want to be there is the biggest problem that I found with it. Because, like, I'm the kind of person who I can forgive quite a lot in a film if it looks like people are having fun, or that, you know, the people made it had a good time, you know, or were passionate about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I can forgive, like, shitty CGI or slightly bad dialogue or whatever if it looks like people are really giving it some welly and having the time of their life. This film, it looks like I'm almost certain a lot of it was overdubbed in ADR afterwards because people didn't even bother saying lines on the set. there's so much ADR, it's almost painful. And it's like Dakota Johnson just turns up and exists. There's no like performance there. She's just a meat sack carrying around words. There's no, like, nothing about her or her character is even vaguely interesting. The only character trait that she's really given is doesn't want kids, and they portray this in some of the worst ways I've ever seen in films. Now, I'll admit, I'm always a bit of I'm always a bit annoying when it comes to characters who don't want kids or don't like kids, because I am somebody who doesn't want kids, has never wanted kids, absolutely zero aspirations to be a mother. And it's not because I hate children. I absolutely adore my niece and nephew. I just know I'd be a bad parent because I've got zero patience. And also the idea of something wriggling around inside of me just makes me want to do a sick, if I'm honest. So no, thank you. So like, it's a fairly big spoiler, right? Peter Parker gets born in this movie, and there's a sequence where they're at his mom's like baby shower before she's given birth to him. And Dakota Johnson's character, whose name I've forgotten, that's how boring this movie was. Something Webb, wasn't it?
Cassandra, I believe her.
Cassie.
Character's name.
There you go. She just starts inexplicably talking about how her mom died in childbirth and just goes on and on about it. And everybody in the room has gone silent and he's staring at her. And she's like, no, don't worry about it. Like, it's rare to do, it's fairly rare to die in childbirth. And I'm like, we get it. She doesn't want kids, or like, that doesn't mean that she's completely socially inept. Like, I don't want kids, but I've literally never gone to a baby shower and just started talking about, like, God, imagine having a child. Wouldn't that be the worst thing in the world? Did you know that you could die in childbirth? Like, what?
With a PowerPoint presentation and slides to show it all.
Here are the statistics on how frequently people just pop it as they're popping out a baby. Like, what are you doing? It was so... There's so many interactions in this film where everybody's just like wildly awkward and not in a normal human awkward way. In fact, I said to Rich, I was a bit concerned that some of the dialogue might have been written by AI because it didn't feel like a human had ever done it or looked at it. Like, it's truly such a baffling movie.
Yeah, I've never really understood Sony's persistence on pursuing this Spider-Verse thing. Certainly in the live action, because I can't understand how they can do Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse. Spectacularly brilliant movies that really understand kind of what it is to be Spider-Man and all the rest of it. And then they do the live action things. And, the Venom ones that I've watched, they're tolerable. It's okay. You know, it's mildly diverting. I didn't watch the Mobius one because I'm not a fan of Jared Leto, so I'm not looking forward to his Tron either.
Can tell you it isn't good, Mobius. Just don't worry about it.
It's not even. And then they do this one. I'm going, why do you persist on that? Having characters whose entire existence relies on their connection in some form to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because I kind of like the visual of Ezekiel in the comics. I kind of like the cool kind of like white-haired guy kind of in a suit, crawling on the walls, having kind of all of these spider powers that are non-explained. And the relationship he has with Peter in the comics is a bit more, I don't want to say nuanced, but there's more to it than it takes a while to develop before things happen. And it's a great little run in the comics, and John Romita Jr. does the art for it, so it looks lovely. But it's like, so Peter Parker bases his suit later on a bloke that existed before who was trying to kill his, it's like, how does this make any sense? Like, if you're not going to have it in, you know, if it's not going to be part of the Spider-Man universe with an actual Spider-Man in it, don't bother. Just give it all back to Sony. Give it all back to Marvel, Sony.
Well, I was going to say, the other big problem with this film is Ezekiel, because I'm not convinced that person has acted in anything ever before. It's, no offence, dude, truly terrible performance. Just bringing absolutely nothing to the table. But that character makes zero sense in the context of the film, because they show him to be, like, ludicrously overpowered. Like, there's a sequence where he's sort of chasing them through a subway, and he's, like, skittering across the top of the train and along the walls, and then like appearing out of nowhere and like dragging a security guard away by the legs. He can't even see, he's there, he's that fast, but he can't catch four completely non-powered ladies who are running quite slowly, I'll be honest. not chipping the way that you should be chipping when a man in a black spider suit is advancing upon you. That's not how you should be moving. And so they just keep sort of showing him sort of bouncing around them, because he can't touch them or they'd be dead. Like, they'd just be dead. So they have to just keep having him like, I guess I'll take out this security guard instead, even though he could easily just kick their heads off. Like, it's like, it's so stupid. And then again, just spoiling the bejesus out of this, because I have to talk about the last like 5 minutes of the film. Maybe it's a bit longer than that. there's like a big confrontation. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but my friend Sam told me this afterwards, and it really genuinely made me laugh. This movie's sponsored by Pepsi. And earlier in the movie, there's a sequence where somebody offers her a Pepsi and she turns it down for a beer. And that's really funny to me. But also the final sort of confrontation takes place like on a sort of roof with a big neon Pepsi sign. And I think that's how they sort of get rid of Ezekiel, because they sort of squash him with a big Pepsi P or some. It's fucking, I'll stop paying attention by that point. But she gets like knocked into the sea. And there's a whole running theme through this film. I put this in my Letterboxd review because it drove me mad. I hate CPR in movies, and I'll tell you for why, right? You can't do it. CPR in real life is violent as fuck. To do it properly, you have to have your arms in such a like stiff, horrible position, and you have to exert enough force that you could potentially break ribs. In movies, it's like tantamount to gently slapping someone with a wet fish. Like it's the nothingness of movement. There's several scenes in this movie where CPR is pivotal to the plot, and it looks like they're just giving him a little hug. Like it's so shit. But she gets knocked into the sea, and the kids that she previously didn't like but taught CPR just in case bring her back, and apparently none of them have enough connection with their own families because they all decide to move in together. But guess what? Cassie's blind now. And there's just a sequence where they're in an apartment and she's just knocking around with the stupidest, guess what, I'm a blind person now, glasses on. And the kids are just like, they just apparently live there now. And there's this like awkward exchange that doesn't come across familial in any way. And then they just seem to want you to accept that that's how, like, from then on, those girls will just become super spider ladies somehow. And that's the end. And I was like, what?
Do you have any knowledge of the actual Madam Web character in the comics?
So not really. So my entire thing with this was just breeze along and see how you get on without that comic knowledge. Because I feel like comic book movies should be a bit more accessible than they can be at the moment. Because, like, my mum's a nerd, right? She loves superheroes and, like, Saturday morning cartoons and horror movies and video games. But she's not somebody who has the money or the storage space to collect monthly comics. It's not something she's ever going to do. But she should be able to go and see Madame Web and not come out of it and be like, what happened? What was that? What was any of that? Why did any of it happen? There's an inexplicable scene, and I think it's supposed to be the girls bonding, but it doesn't work, where they're in a diner and they all just get up on the table to dance to, I think it's Toxic by Britney Spears, which might be the only good thing in the movie. Britney Spears' best song, and I'll fight you on it. But it's the most awkward bit of dancing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, not to get racist about it, it's the whitest anybody's ever been. Like, just truly a baffling sequence. Like, the whole film is a baffling sequence. And some of the camera work, oh my God, there's just like quick zooms. Are you just doing that so that I don't have to see what's on the screen? Because you can't be asked. Like, that's how it comes across. It's so, and the worst part is it's not even so bad it's good. Because you know there are some films where it's like so stupid but you have a really good laugh. Like most Jason Statham movies. Yeah. Like, they're not technically good, but I love them.
Like, yeah, you know, anybody you can justify, like, the Crank or Crank 2. You know, we don't care. We don't care about that. It's just the Stafe being nuts. And I have to get around to seeing The Beekeeper, but it's on Sky, which is a shame, because when you and Barry were talking about it on Saturday morning, it's like, oh, man, I need to watch this show. But it's like, I can't.
Yeah, it's when it comes out to watch somewhere else, somewhere for free, definitely get on. Like, it's another one of those ones where, like, I think this isn't actually a bad movie, because, like, a lot of Statham's movies, I'm very aware, are bad enjoyable films. I think this is actually on the cusp of being an actual good movie, but it's also ridiculous and fun. It's so good.
Which is what you want sometimes.
A jar of honey, like,
this is a beekeeper.
So funny. Homemade, home jarred honey just wangs it right in the face, knocks it right the fuck out. So good. So good.
Yeah. And the other thing with Madam Web, though, it's like they've wasted all of these young actors who are kind of hot, in not hot in the physical sense, but hot in terms of, like, you know, they've got big profile.
Yeah.
Because like everybody's talking about Sydney Sweeney, and she's got some crazy movie coming out as well, that everybody, a horror flick. So why waste that opportunity? Because surely you've got a built-in audience, people who come into it from things like Euphoria or whatever it is they've done before. Mm-hmm. It's like, why focus on the older woman? Because I thought surely the thing to do would have been to have Madame Web as Madame Web, the character that we know from the comics, because she kind of emerges that way. So it would have made sense. And you could have done the backstory about how she got to where she was. But they could have started with, it was, you know, she's there and then she guides the girls through things and the development of their powers and whatever it is, rather than it being like a flash forward thing or dream or whatever it is. Mm. And wasting that whole thing. It's like, you know, there's a much better movie in there. And I think there's a much better movie in there with most of the Sony output. Because it's like, you can do it over there in animation. It's like, for God's sake, you can write a story. It's possible. You've got people on your payroll that can do it.
Yeah, it's the biggest sort of egregious thing in it for me is Adam Scott, because I absolutely adore Adam Scott. And I'm like, how do you cast Adam Scott as Uncle Ben, as Uncle fucking Ben, and you don't make him interesting or funny? Like, what? What? Truly, I despair. I just, because I don't know about you, but like, I love Adam Scott generally from all the comedy shit he's done. But if you've been watching Severance on Apple TV, that's like one of the best TV shows of the past, like, fucking 5 or 6 years, I think. And he's so good in it. And the thing about him is that he is really good at playing, like, interesting, nuanced, funny characters. And then he was just there. And I was like, if that had been, that could have been literally any man, any white brunette man, like just such a nothing part. Peter Parker's mom, right? I didn't even realise that was Emma Roberts, right? And I didn't even realise she was in this film. And again, could have been anyone. Yeah. Could have cast absolutely like a complete unknown and saved yourself probably quite a lot of quid.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it was. This is the first film written by AI, and they're just testing the waters. And they're gone. Yeah, maybe we should not bother.
Maybe we don't do it again. Maybe the human connection is what we needed. It does feel to me like it was a robot trying to be human. Everybody in the film were like robots just trying to be human people. It was just one big Turing test.
Chat GTP, write me a film about spider women. It's like, oh yeah, the spiders, they come from Peru or wherever it is. It's like, yeah, we'll do that.
There's a weird sort of run through the film as well, where well, as I run through, it crops up twice and disconnectedly enough that you sort of forget that it happens, where Cassie sort of forgives her mom at the end, and I'm like, hold on, what's she forgiving her for? Dying? It was pure. She got shot. Like she didn't just, you know, pop down the shop for a pint of milk and never come back. Like she was murdered. And you've been holding this against her for 30 years. Like, what's this now? I don't know. Just everything about this film weird. Just so, like, almost uncanny in how lacking in anything it was. Because if I was to sit and list what actually happens in this film, you'd be like, cool, that's actually quite a lot of stuff that happens in that film. That sounds quite exciting. Never been more bored in my life. I just truly don't understand. I feel like I've talked about it too much because there's so little going on in it, just truly.
I shall probably add it to my watch list when it ends up on Netflix and like Mobius not watch it. But I'm kind of thinking, like, is this just setting up the fact that like Kraven the Hunter, which looks equally as bad?
Oh god, that looks shit, doesn't it?
It's gonna be terrible as well.
Looks so shit. How do you have Kraven the Hunter without the guy that he's hunting?
Yeah.
Because you can't have Spider-Man in it, so what's happening? I would say, if I'm completely honest, and I fucking hate Jared Leto, like, inexplicably, I don't know why, everything he does riles me up, just his face even, but I would say, I think I would rather watch Morbius again than Madame Web, because at least it has a bit where Matt Smith dances in a mirror. It doesn't have Britney Spears toxic, though, so, you know. Swings around.
You could just play that in the background while you're watching it.
I suppose.
Yeah. Do you your own Schneider cut where you put it in by yourself?
Just edit it. Yeah, learn how to video edit and just redo the whole movie myself.
Just redo it, yeah.
Never going to do that. I'm far too lazy. Should we talk about an actually good movie?
Go on then.
Should we talk about Dune? Let's talk about Dune.
Dune 2, part 2.
Dune part 2. Part to. Now, I will very freely admit that I was worried about seeing this because I realised that it's been long enough since I saw Dune that I'd forgotten it. I knew I gave it 5 stars, so I knew I liked it. but I was like, I don't remember the thrust of it except for the sandworms, and which was like, they're not even really that pivotal to the plot. They're just sort of a vague threat that's always there. Like, the politicky stuff is the stuff you should have been paying attention to. And I was like, yeah. I remember that Jason Momoa was there. And then that's... I ran out of memory. But thankfully, I don't know about you, but I thought Dune Part 2 was pretty good at just, like, picking up that story and running with it without spoon-feeding it to you all again, but, like, vaguely sort of refreshing your memory on who everyone was, which was nice. And it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Well, it looks incredible. It's for a film that's mostly set on a very bland-looking planet, it does a good job of making you kind of, like, enjoy it from a kind of visual aesthetic point of view. I was torn with it as well because I liked it a lot. I thought it was a brilliantly well-made movie, mm-hmm. perfectly executed. I didn't love it. My problem was I didn't love it because I didn't feel any emotional connection to anybody in the end because we didn't really get to kind of see why they fall in love or the kind of anything more than kind of very cursory. It kind of skips through things quite quickly and kind of like people are pregnant and then stuff happens. It goes by quite quickly. And I'm kind of wondering whether it would have been better as a 3-part movie. So they had a bit more time in this one to kind of like, you know, really nail down the relationship between Paul and Chana so that you got to see a bit more of that. Because I'm a big fan of the 84 David Lynch version. I saw that when it first came out. And it's weird and odd and kind of doing its own thing. And even that really, I mean, that flies by quickly and that does hit. So I really wanted to love this one. But it was like, oh, it's just a little unemotional. And it's kind of like, I wanted to, you know, come out of it thinking, because I've seen people saying it's like this generation's Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or whatever it is. And I'm kind of like, I'm not quite sure if it is, because there's not really characters in there that you kind of like love. Although I was, when I came out, I was thinking, Josh Brolin looked great with a goatee. Do I just shave the sides off my beard? Like, that's a good look he's got going
just
on there.
A little go. Yeah, he does look quite handsome. Yeah, I'll give him that. I had a sort of similar issue with it. I mean, I still like it was like 4.5 out of 5 for me because I think it's visually stunning enough that I wasn't that. But because it's a weird thing for me, I hate sand and I get stressed out at movies where people have to interact with sand a lot or where people get really dirty, like, oh god, the sequence with in Neverending Story in the swamp with the horse. Yeah. Like everybody else was getting stressed out, so like, oh no, it's poor horse, and there was me going, there's so much mud in there everywhere, like, oh. And I was getting really distressed just thinking about it, and that has to dry off and they still run around in it because they can't stop to have a shower. Like, I was getting really stressed anyway. So I think any movie that can make me look at sand for like nearly 3 hours and think that not only is it beautiful but that like pretty much you could pretty much stop the movie in any frame and be like, I'll print that off and put it on my wall, like it's gorgeous, is going to get quite a lot of stars from me. But I do agree that there were two issues that I had. The first was that Paul by the end is quite unlikable. And like, I wasn't his biggest fan in the first movie anyway. I was very pro Duncan Idaho, partly because his name was Duncan Idaho and that's ridiculous and wonderful, but also because, you know, Jason Momoa, just one of the world's most charismatic people, I think. And like, no offense to Timothy Chalamet, but he's a bit of a lettuce, isn't he, of a person. Like, just a bit sort of like wet and flappy.
Yeah.
And like, he does a good enough job, but I think when your lead dude is probably like the worst actor in the batch, that's going to make it a hard sell.
Yeah.
And I sort of agree as well that there's kind of a lack of chemistry with him and everyone else. Yeah. In fact, I think the only believable relationship in it really that I could see was him and Duncan Idaho in the previous movie. Like, they seemed like they genuinely cared about each other.
Yeah.
And it was a bit sad that he wasn't in this one at all. But I mean, it's one of those things where, like, I'm just sort of, I'm always blown away by people who are able to make 3-hour movies that don't make me want to go to sleep, because I've got the attention span of a goldfish. So you've really got to hook me into something, because if I'm at home and I'm watching a film and it doesn't hook me, I'm just going to start fannying on my phone, maybe do a couple of Sudoku. Not really pay a whole lot of attention. If I'm at the cinema and a movie doesn't hook me, I'm going to have a nap. That's going to happen. I'm going to have paid £13 to have a slightly uncomfortable nap. But yeah, I mean, I was like hooked all the way through.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that long.
No, it doesn't.
I keep hearing people say how long it is, and I'm going, was it really?
I can't be right.
It's like, it couldn't have been that long. Because like you said, you kind of go along with it quite quickly. It's just some of the kind of... The writing is pretty good throughout, although the one moment I thought was quite weird was after he's, spoilers here kids, is when he's drunk the bile of the worm, which he's not supposed to do because he's supposed to be only female Bene Generates can survive it. And when Zendaya comes in and she's like, oh baby, I'm like, what? We're in 3463 or whatever it is, and the rest of your language is so kind of like, you know, official and stuff. And then he's like, that just seemed a little bit kind of like, that's a very kind of 2000s kind of thing, which was just pulled me out of it for a little bit.
I tell you the one bit of dialogue that pulled me out, and this is purely my fault, it's not the film, is I have a little bit of a problem with the thing that everybody's fighting over being called spice anyway. That's really funny to me. And everybody's being so serious about it. Oh my god, there's spice. And there's a bit in the film where he eats something that looks like a curry and then sort of looks dramatically up and says, there's spice in this. And I almost pissed myself. I was like, of course there is. Oh, he means spice. Yeah. Like the dangerous spice. Kind of spice.
Just a super hot vindaloo.
I cannot get behind them calling it spice. Like, I know that's from the book. I know it's not the film's fault. I know they probably would have got all the nerds absolutely up their arseholes if they'd have changed it to something else. I get it. But it's very funny to me to have somebody very seriously proclaim that there's a spice in their curry. Like, that's really funny.
But the other thing that I find weird is that they do it in the Lynch thing, is the significance of what it is that spice does. Because it's the thing that they have so that the Space Guild can navigate interstellar. What's it? Because it does something to them, so they can do these extravagant navigations and things. So in the David Lynch one, they have these really grotesquely weird creatures that are pilots for ships, and so they have to have the spice to be able to navigate the what's it. So without the spice and these pilots, they can't do interstellar travel. And it's kind of like they don't really do any spacey bits. Which is kind of, at least they did that in the first one. There was a few more spacey bits, and I do love a film that's a bit more spacey. Yeah. I do kind of like a space battle type bits and pieces. So we get quite a few things blowing up in this, which is quite nice. So I kind of like that, but it's like just a little bit of space travel, some nice ship designs.
Yeah.
Because when you see the Jodorowsky documentaries, he gets all these beautiful spaceship designs. And stuff, and you kind of think, well, it is a kind of one of those kind of unfilmable books, really, that's never going to quite get there for some, you know, some people like one version, some people like another version. It's like,
I'm quite lucky with book to film adaptations. Not that I've read Dune, because it looks too big and long. Maybe one day I'll give it a whirl.
Just get the audiobook, you'll be fine.
Yeah, one of the things that's quite good for me in terms of like book to film adaptations is I have that thing where you can't imagine stuff in your head when you read it, so I just like hear it in my own voice like I'm reading an audiobook to myself. So I've got like no concept of what things look like, which is actually I think why I struggle with Tolkien's writing, because he'll spend a lot of time, like 3 pages, just talking about a field and what this field looks like, and I'm like, I can't picture it, I don't care. And then a ring wraith turns up for half a paragraph and I'm like, are you fucking suck my dick, what is this? Just losing my entire mind. I struggle with Stephen King for the same thing, because he'll talk a lot about the geography of the towns that he's in, like which road you have to go down to get to this particular thing. And I'm like, I don't care. I've not got a map in my head. I don't care. Just, you know, have a scary clown or whatever. But yeah, so like Dune for me, I've not got any sort of context for it, because it was literally something that Rich was interested in. In fact, when we saw the trailer for the first film, I was like, that looks boring. Pretty but boring. And Rich was like, for fuck's sake, like I really want to see that. I was like, well, I'll watch it. I just won't watch anything. I'll give anything a whirl. But whether or not I'll stay awake for it is a different kettle of fish. But yeah, I mean, I'm assuming there has to be a third part to this, because this story definitely didn't finish.
Yeah, I definitely got the impression that the ending was not an ending.
No.
You know, even more so than the first film, which kind of just went, yeah, we're just stopping here.
Yeah,
it's just, like, it's just ending. This again, this one kind of just seemed like, well, you've not finished the story here. What's going to happen? You've just kind of said you're going to marry the princess of the universe or whatever it is she is, and your actual girlfriend's just stormed off, mm-hmm. and you're kind of like going, well, you know, this quite clearly isn't the end. There's more to this story than you're letting well, on.
Yeah, there's a magic fetus happening. We've got to find out more about that, haven't we?
Did everything we've just seen just happen in less than 9 months as well? That's the other weird thing, because at least in the David Lynch version, his sister gets born, so she's around. She's a creepy blue eyed know it all, which is quite weird. But in this one, they just go, oh, we're just going to skip that and go to Anna Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I don't know what's going on here, but that's a bit weird.
I tell you what did get me as well was, like, I absolutely adore the costume design for this film, but it felt like somebody gave them the brief for Florence Pugh's character, Stabby, because all of her outfits looked like they could kill her if she took them on. If she put them on or took them off wrong,
yeah.
Like just knives all around her face, just metal everywhere, And I was like, that cannot be something you like walk around and operate in your everyday life. Yeah. Like, that's mad.
Did you notice somewhat weird with her character as well? I don't know if it's just me, but when you first meet her, she's got nothing on her head.
Mm.
So she's all open, but progressively as the film goes on, they seem to encase her face.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to stop her from, it's almost like she's being caged in some way, because that final costume when she's got all the bits over her face. So it's like, is that some kind of strange metaphor that she's like a bird in a cage that's just being a commodity that's being transferred to Paul to make everything, all the geopolitical stuff work? And it's been that long since I read Dune. I can't remember if there's a like that underlying metaphor. I don't imagine it's actually in the book, because I remember it being quite a hard read.
Yeah.
And I'm like, was that a real cool visual thing that I was just going, this is quite, you know, just interestingly, as each time we see her, she starts off with, you can see her hair, and the next thing she's got like a hood up, and then she's got more on her face, and then she's got that final cage thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe that's a thing, that's just me.
No, it could, but I mean, I like it when there's more meaning behind it than just, it looks pretty, because I hate when costumes look really nice, but you just think there's no way, even in fantasy land of, you know, sandworms and space nonsense, like, there's no way anybody just walks around wearing that, because they will kill, so they'll take somebody's eye out, their own, probably. Like, it's not an outfit that can work, ever. That's the kind of outfit you see on a runway in Paris, and the woman who's modelling it has had to be painstakingly pressed into it for like 3 hours beforehand, because otherwise if she gets into it any faster, it'll kill her. Like, truly, truly bad. It did look good though. But I mean, if there's meaning behind it, then it's more acceptable to me. But I always find like costume choices like that baffling.
I might have to do a read into it, because that's one of the things I miss about the modern age, because everything's on the internet, but it's never anything interesting. Because I used to love reading things like the Cinegraphics, I think, the magazines that talked about like the making of the films and all the stuff. So you get all of this kind of extra content. It's like, am I going to have to wait for the DVD release where there's like a audio commentary and stuff that I've got to sit through 3 hours of? It's like, just tell me, Dennis, was there some meaning behind this costume choice, or was it just because you went, oh, it looks cool, it's all good?
There's a lot of what gets me about, we're doing it again, we're doing Old Man Shouts at Clouds, aren't we? But what gets me about like the internet is that sometimes I want to look more into a movie, because like it dug into my brain, but then what I'll find is like, oh, the baffling ending to XYZ explained, and you watch a video and you're like, that wasn't even a confusing it, nobody needs this explaining unless they didn't watch the film.
Yeah,
like, are you calling us dummies? I don't get it. Like, I watched yonks ago now, I watched the movie Frank, which is like ostensibly a Frank, what's his name, Sidebottom movie, but yeah, not, yeah. It's nothing to do with his actual life.
It's the one with Michael Fassbender in it.
Yeah, and it got lodged in my brain for days because I was just mesmerised by how fucking weird it was and, like, but how, like, sort of poignant and sad it was. So I was, like, trying to look into it as much as I can, and then it was just, like, videos that were, like, oh, Frank Sidebottom's head explained, and it was just, it's paper mache, and I'm like, yeah, I know. Like, it's clear that it, I'm looking at it. Fuck's sake. But anyway... Just stop shouting. I feel like I need to point out to people that I'm not even 39 yet. Like, I'm quite young. I'm just
You're just a baby. You're just a baby. I've got to the point now where I've moved into the second to last category in ages.
Oh, no.
And most of my posts, most of the mail I get now is either invitations to health screenings or various other medical things to just make sure I'm not going to pop my clogs at any moment.
Yeah.
It's like, can I just get some nice... I have to order things off the internet just so I get nice things through the mail nowadays.
You like to get a little bit of life insurance. You're like, I don't really want to... What about funeral costs? Shut up.
The best thing was, I had the best email I ever had in my life when I turned 50, which came from my local health authority. I don't know how they got my email address or whatever it is. And they sent me an email within which was like, it was kind of like, you know, you get into an age now, you just want to make sure you're okay. To keep fit and healthy, here's a few things you could do. And one was an invitation to a tea dance at my local library. And the one after that was a Vera Lynn appreciation night. And I was like, I was born in the tail end of the 1960s, not the tail end of the 1940s. It's like, if this had been like, you know, a wrecking night at Snobs or a Clash appreciation night, you might have got me down there. But yeah. I was like thinking, what have you? It's like, what do you assume that when everybody gets to a certain age, they just go, okay, that's it. We're into tea dances and Vera Lynn now. So yeah. I don't understand it.
Watch all World War II movies together and reminisce. The one that gets me, and I will talk about pop culture in a minute, is the... Well, I don't understand why the NHS doesn't set their reminder thingies to go the day after your birthday. Because you've probably never... You won't have had this, but other ladies in your life might have. But, like, the instant I hit whatever age it was that you start having smears, that very day I got an email, have you booked a pap smear? And I was like, it's my birthday. Like, what are you talking about? Like, please, just give me the day. God, like... Set it for the 20th of September. Jesus.
Button me up with a nice message first and then email me the next day.
Yeah. You don't even have to acknowledge my birthday. I don't mind. You're the NHS. I don't care. But literally, like, and that's happened to me a couple of times where like I've crossed some age threshold for some sort of medical checkup. And it's like, happy birthday. Can we get in your badge? What? I can't deal with that.
No.
Oh, God. Hey, I've been waffling for so long and half of it's just been us ranting about the internet. I love it.
I'm a bad influence, Stacey. That's a terrible I'm a terrible influence on you.
I love a good whinge is the problem. Like, I don't need much pushing towards a whinge, if I'm fair.
This is why we've got to do the I'm Not Having It podcast.
I tell you what, I'd have so much ammunition for it this week because I wasn't going to talk about these too much, but I was genuinely worried about not having enough to talk about today because I had a weekend where I watched like four films in a row and
I saw your Letterboxd reviews.
Like, oh my God, how did I do that? I was like, should I postpone the recording in this episode and try and cram something good in my face? Because I can't, I don't know what I'm going to say. But thankfully, Madame Webb was bonkers enough for me to just be like, bwah. But yeah, like, watch Drive Away Dolls. Not very good. What's the weird thing about that is that's, I've forgotten which Coen brother it is.
It's Ethan.
It's like... Yeah, so it's he directed it, and I think he wrote it along with somebody else, but I can't remember who they were. And it feels like somebody watched one Coen Brothers movie and went, I could do that, and then made a really, really shit one. So there's, like, still a couple of things to, like, there's the odd joke tickled me a bit, and the premise is kind of good. And, like, none of the actors are bad in it or anything, but... Oh my God, just all of the sort of like charisma and intrigue that's usually in Coen Brothers movies just wasn't there. And I was like, oh, like this isn't enjoyable, is it?
No, because I saw the first trailer for it in front of Dune. And I thought, oh, that looks quite interesting because I like one of the lead actresses is in a show called Miracle Workers. I don't know if you've ever seen it on Sky, which has got, it's got Daniel Radcliffe,
yeah.
And it's been that's brilliant because like each season's a different thing. So it started off with them being working for God. The kind of second one was I can't remember where, medieval times, and they had the Wild West, and they're currently doing one with them. It's like a Mad Max themed one. So she's in that, and I kind of like that. And I thought, oh, this looks kind of cool and quirky. I kind of like a good quirky movie, something a little odd. So I thought I might give a check, and then I saw your review, and I was like, oh no, don't say it's going to be not great. And it's not worth a trip to the cinema.
Oh no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't worth a trip to the cinema. Rich actually said as he came at, like, halfway through the movie, he sort of leaned over to me and went, this feels like a bad Coen Brothers movie, because neither of us knew it was a Coen brother. And then it got to the end and it came up, it was directed by, and I just looked at Rich and he was like, what? Like the most baffled face I've ever seen on a man, just staring at the screen like, did I see that correctly? Because both of us were just underwhelmed, which I think even if you've, I mean, I don't think I've seen a Coen Brothers movie that I straight up dislike, but I've never, the one thing I can say about all of them is I've never been underwhelmed. Like, they're always like interesting films. I'd be interested to see, Rich said that the other brother, Joel?
Yeah.
Why is my brain forgetting names today? Just let us fall out my name like my head like fucking sieve. Rich said he has done another movie on his own, and I'd be intrigued to see what that is like, because clearly Ethan doesn't work well on his own.
Yeah.
He needs Joel, but I don't know if it works the other way. I'd have to find out that movie and have a watch. And then I also watched Stop Motion. Now I feel like I should preface this by saying I have a bit of a problem with some kinds of stop motion anyway. I find some of it, I say some of it because it just sort of depends on the design of the characters. So like something like Kubo and the Two Strings, which is cute and amazing, like I love. But things like, can't watch a Ray Harryhausen movie because those stop motion things scare me. Just too uncanny and creepy looking, and I don't like it. And I don't know if you've seen the trailer for the stop motion, but it's a horror film about a girl who is making a stop motion film with her overbearing mother, who is like quite a prolific name in stop motion movies, but can no longer manipulate the dolls because of her arthritis.
Yeah.
And I've never seen dolls, scarier dolls in my entire fucking life. Like, they are just absolute nightmare fuel. At parts of that, but some bits of it, they're made out of actual like flesh, like animal flesh underneath mortician's wax, which was a thing I didn't know they actually used on like real human people. And there's just so many bits. So again, I have to say, I don't know where my border is, my boundary is for this, but like I can watch a slasher movie and people can get like stabbed to eye heaven and I'm like, eh, doesn't bother me at all. Somebody puts a finger in a wound, I'm going to vomit, right? That's one of the reasons why I didn't like the movie. What's that movie called that Rich really likes? Oh, no. Where there's, like, you can, like, plug a video game into, like, a hole in your back.
Is that the Existence one with Jude Law?
Yes, that's the one. And Every time they poke around in that back hole.
That's Cronenberg for you. That's a David Cronenberg movie.
Absolutely sickening, mate. And there's like several bits in this where people are imagining wounds and then just stuffing a finger in there. And I'm like, I can't, what are you? So, to be fair, I gave this 2 stars, but there's a strong chance that it's actually a really good movie and I just couldn't look at it.
I quite like the poster.
Yeah.
So I thought I might give it a try.
Yeah. I think, I don't want to put you off it. I'd say give it a watch. Because it might be good. I will admit, I didn't look at a lot of the screen. Any time the dolls were on the screen and any time there was a finger in a wound, I wasn't looking. So to be fair, there was probably like a good 50% of the movie I wasn't looking at. But I was still hearing it and stuff. I think my issue with it was that it didn't really... The premise was good in the sense of like the stop motion adds like a whole extra like grotesque element that... If I could have looked at it, I'm sure I would have been very scared and it would have been very, well, I was scared. That's why I didn't look at it. So it was very like, you know, impactful in that sense. But they don't really do anything. I didn't feel like they did anything with it. It was a very standard sort of like, I don't want to ruin the actual plot, but it was a very standard plot.
Yeah.
which was a bit of a shame.
So have you seen any of the kind of like, because I like a lot of the kind of Brothers Kwai and Jan Svankmajer stop motion animation, which is that kind of very grotesque rotting meat kind of grim kind of thing.
Probably haven't seen it because I've probably avoided it like the plague. Rich watched something last year. Oh, I wish I could remember what it was called. That was like a sort of 30-minute, it was like a short film that was all stop motion, and it was all like meat going through grinders and like legs coming off and eyes melting. And I was just like, what's this for? Like, how is this entertainment to you, Rich? And he was like, it's amazing.
It's stop motion. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Do you know what? I've got so much appreciation for like any kind of animator, stop or otherwise. But that doesn't mean I'm going to look at your art if it looks that scary, which stop motion definitely does.
I think I'll give it a try when I can find someone to watch it.
I actually think I would recommend it in the sense of like it's a good enough story. I think that if you're not spending half of your time going, doing a minor, you know, keep it down, Stace, off to the side, then if it sort of gives you an idea of my limits with stop motion, like I was really scared of, do you remember the Judder Man from the Smirnoff adverts from like I want to say the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s? So I would have been like, what, like nearly 20 probably. I hated him. Like every time that advert came on, I was like, gotta look over there. I'm scared of ET. Don't like ET at all. Yeah, nightmare fuel. Anyway, I've forgotten what the other movies were that I watched because they were that pants.
Yeah, there were quite a few really. You were just scoring very badly and just seemed to have to say, I've ruined my weekend.
Yeah, I was like, what was this weekend? So we watched Team America World Police because we both really like that.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, cleanse the palate. Fuck yeah. What I love about that movie is that people get up in arms because they're like, it's racist. And I'm like, yeah, to everyone. Like, it's like everyone in that movie comes off as an arsehole. It's not. Although I will say, and I did say this on Twitter, actually, that I watched that movie an embarrassing amount of times before I realised that Alec Baldwin wasn't voiced by actually Alec Baldwin. It's such a good impression. Yeah. Good old Maurice LaMarche being fucking amazing, as per usual. I have bogarted this conversation for a really long time. Was there anything else that you would like to talk about, Keith?
I don't think there is too much at the moment. I think it's I'm not so far behind in my comic buying that I haven't been to, not that Worlds Apart need to know, I haven't been there to collect the books for a couple of weeks. So I've got a few things that I need to pick up, and I know you've read one already, which was the Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution, which I'm quite looking forward to. I kind of liked The Last Ronin, and I did enjoy the Lost Years book as well. So I'm kind of like thinking, I believe this one is the crazy oversized one as well, which is kind of really annoying because The Last Ronin won't go in any of the boxes that I've got. So it has to go on a different set of shelves. And then they did The Last Ronin Lost Years as regular sized books. It's like, just either keep it one size.
Oh, pick one. Jesus. Yeah.
It's like, just make it one size, because otherwise I've got to put things in another box somewhere else. Because they seem to be doing that with a few other things, because Dark Horse have got a book called If You Find This, I'm Already Dead, which I think the second issue comes out as we're recording this week. And that's another oversized one. And it's like, oh God, do you realise how difficult it is to store these things when you make them different sizes? Mm. So it's fine. You know, I've got somewhere to keep the few 2000 ADs I've still got, but I can't be adding any more to that. It's already shelves grinding under the weight of everything. But yeah, I think the other comics I'm really enjoying is Hellblazer, which is weird because Cy Spurrier and Aaron Campbell, who were doing it for DC a few years back, and then they just unceremoniously cancelled it after 12 issues. And then they went off and did another book Cy did it with Charlie Adelard called Damn Them All, which is basically just John Constantine is now gender swapped. And Ellie Hawthorne was the name of the character, and that was great. And that was like another one that was like taking a dig at England and everything in it. And then it was like DC went, oh no, we made a fatal mistake here, let's get them back. And so then he's back doing another Hellblazer run, which is called Dead in America, which is basically just taking the piss out of Americans. Not Americans the people, but American the concept, which is quite funny. So he's kind of he's doing the cowboy thing with folklore and stuff. That's really good because it reminds me a lot of the old Vertigo kind of Swamp Thing stuff. So it's a very much a Vertigo book, but it's under this DC Black Label Sandman universe thing. But that's quite cool. I'm quite enjoying that. Just mostly because it's just really taking a satirical knife to current society, which is quite funny. So the first one was like that. It was all about like British politics and aristocracy and stuff. And it was like, they're not messing about here. It was really good. Yeah. So that was quite good. And I'm quite enjoying the Transformers book that Daniel Warren Johnson is doing. But I'm gutted that he's only doing the art for 6 issues and then he's just writing it. But I think the new guy that's coming on is going to be quite good, which is quite, that looks quite cool as well. And then I think the other one I'm looking forward to reading, which I haven't picked up yet, is Helen of Windborn, which is a Tom King book.
Ooh, yeah.
Done and with art by Bill Chris Evely, who did the Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow series. And this is a fantasy thing with a woman who goes, she inherits a house, and it's kind of this kind of mystical world opens up to her. It looks beautiful, and so I'm looking forward to reading that one as well, because I do quite like Tom King's stuff, strangely.
Yeah,
I don't know
me
why.
Too. I keep seeing that knocking around on Twitter. Like, a lot of people have been saying it's really good. Yeah. It's the problem with me and comics, because I would genuinely love to read more, but there's just too many.
Yeah.
Like, me and Rich got to a point where it's like, we can't afford them, we can't store them, so literally we just like picked a franchise each, and that's the only thing. That's the only thing we do now. So we're like, well, I'll get Turtles, and you get whatever it is you're getting, and that's the end.
Yeah.
But it does make me a bit sad, because like back when I was reading comics like hardcore, before we sold all of our old ones, because we just literally didn't have room in the house. They were like stacked up, you know, under the bed, and suddenly the bed was on the ceiling. Like, I used to read, like, Hellblazer was one that I really loved. Mm. Genuinely loved that, and like all the Hellboy and BPRD stuff, that's like so my jam. And I just feel like I'm missing out on so much, but I simply cannot.
Yeah.
It's such an expensive hobby. Come
There's on. Quite a few decent horror comics out as well. You know, Image are doing quite a few nice bits and pieces.
I was reading, and I've been meaning to pick up the trades and stuff so I could finish it, but I was reading There's Something Killing the Children.
Yeah.
I think it was called. That was really good for up to the bit that I read, but then I gave up because I was like, yeah, I need money for food and things.
This is why sometimes Humble Bundle comes in very good, because sometimes they do these big collections that you can just get for like 20 quid or whatever it is. They did a whole Hellboy one recently, which I didn't get because I've already got so many in the past that I'm like, I don't know which ones I've got. I mean, the money goes to charity, so I really should just get them. That's quite good. And then you just read them digitally, which is quite nice. Occasionally, although I do still like my books. I like my comics.
Yeah.
In a weird way, because even though I've got every issue already, I bought the ROM omnibus, which is huge. I'm never going to read it. It's been recolored and everything. I'm going to get the Micronauts one in a few months' time as well. It's like, why am I doing this? And it's huge. And it's like, why am I? When I did the Captain Britain one a year or two ago, and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I don't need this. I've got most of these issues anyway that I've kept. So why do I keep doing this to myself? It's like, I don't need it. And my partner keeps on like standing there with her arms crossed going, where's that going? So one in and one out. If I do a delivery and it comes somewhere, I go, can you send it to my local shop so it doesn't come to the house, I can just pick it up?
She'll never know.
She will know if she listens to this. Those cardboard boxes are they're empty. There's nothing in them.
Don't look directly at them. It's fine.
Yeah, it's somebody else's problem. It's a nice pile.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
I know, my shelves are groaning under the weight of all the hard covers I keep buying, because they're so pretty. They're so nice, though. Stop looking at them.
They know what our weak spots are, Stacey. They know what our weak spots are.
Oh, this is the problem. Like, if it's a franchise that I genuinely like, any time they bring out a new version of it, my knee-jerk reaction is, I have to have it. And then, like, I have to really pull myself back of, like, do I have to have it? Or am I just being a twat?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the answer is usually yes. I've got one more thing I wanted to waffle about, and then I feel like we should do our songs and we should shut up because it's been so long. But I am currently in the middle of my fundraising bookworm challenge, which is an annual thing that BCHC charity does, where you get a month, starting on World Book Day, you get a month to read as many books as you can and get sponsored to do it. And this would have been a really good time to plug my sponsorship page, but I've forgotten what the address is and I didn't write it down. But it's in my link tree, which is on all of my socials. So you can find it there if you want to throw some money at me, which would be really nice. But I'm currently in the middle of a book called The City We Became. And I just wanted to mention it because I know by the time I record next time, I'll have forgotten this because it'll be a whole month ago. It's by N.K. Jemisin, who wrote the Broken Earth trilogy that I was twatting on about a couple of years ago about how wonderful it was. And she's an interesting writer for me because I adored the Broken Earth trilogy. So then immediately went to buy, I forgot what they're called now, they're over there. It's like The Killing Moon and something else, another like, is it a duology when it's just two?
Yeah, let's call it that. That sounds right.
Sounded bizarre in my head, but we'll go with it. And that was, it was an effort to get through the first book and I didn't bother with the second. So it was just the flattest, just least charismatic thing I've ever read in my life. And I was like, is this the same person? And so when a friend of mine bought me The City We Became, I did a bit of a panic because I was like, what if this is shit as well? And she just, I don't know, happened to hit a home run on the Broken Earth trilogy. And he's just coasting on that, you know, popularity. But unless this book goes drastically wrong at the end, because I haven't finished it, it's a huge recommend from me. The premise of it is that it's set in a world that's like basically ours, except that cities become sentient. Well, yeah, they sort of get born through people, like avatars of people that are living in the city become those cities' avatars. And this one's set in New York. So there's six of these avatars, one for each of the five boroughs and then one for New York total. And something has gone awry with the birth of this city in particular. And some squiggly, horrible evil is trying to get in before all the avatars are like properly birthed. And it's so good. It's like, one of the issues I have with fantasy books is that they spend so much time world building that you fall asleep and you don't give a shit by the time you actually get to any, you know, characters and happenings. Whereas this one just sort of, because it's sort of adjacent to our world, it just goes, it just starts. And literally the first chapter is like, here's an inciting incident. And then it doesn't stop. And it hasn't stopped like the entire time I've been reading it. And it gives you enough information so that you have like a large idea of what's happening, but enough to keep you interested in finding out more. And it doesn't bog you down in like just boring world building details. I'm absolutely loving it. Thoroughly enjoying it. I did find out though that it's the first in another series and I'm like, just let me read one good book and have at it.
Everybody's gonna have a franchise now.
Well, I suppose I should be quite happy because it means that there's going to be more books that I'm probably going to like. But the longer a series is, the more worried I get that it's just going to peter out and be crappy. So I'm hoping this is another twofer rather than a, you know, a trilogy or a full long series. But
can you do graphic novels in your book read?
I can, as long as, so the rules of the challenge are that it has to be over 120 pages if it's prose, or 150 if it's graphic novels. Reading one issue of a comic wouldn't count because there's prizes, you see. But well, I can't win them because it's the charity I work for, so I'm not part of the competition. But there's prizes so that if whoever raises the most and whoever reads the most wins. And so obviously you couldn't have somebody just like blitzing through like 100 issues of comics and being like, haha, I win. When somebody else is sitting there trying to get through like War and Peace.
If you like M.K. Jemisin, then she did a Green Lantern book for DC a few years back called Far Sector.
Yeah.
Which had got art by Jamal Campbell. Which is kind of like a really kind of odd cosmic Green Lantern. It's like the human character, I think her name's Sojourner, but they call her Joe because it's obviously a bit easier to say. And that was pretty good. That was only 12 issues as well. So it's like it's a done. I think the characters appeared again kind of further down the line. She's been in some of the kind of the DC Voices books and the DC Power books that they've had recently. That's a good read. So that if you could add that in, I think you'd quite like that.
Excellent. Yeah. Hopefully I'll just get the just forget about that duology of nonsense. Woof.
Just read what you like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the problem with the bookworm challenge is that once I've started a book, if I get like a couple of chapters in and I don't really like it, I feel like I have to finish it because I don't want to have wasted that potential reading time on a book I'm not going to finish. So I'm like, well, I'll finish this one because it's the challenge. And then I end up reading a load of books I don't like. So, I've been this year I've been peppering in the big chunky IDW Mirage reprint hardbacks.
Yeah.
Turtles comics, because I know I like those, and they're like 300 pages, so they count if you ask me.
So that's good.
Yeah, I'll put the link to the fundraiser in the show notes if anybody wants to make a donation. It'd be really nice if somebody would, because I've only had one so far and it's making me a bit sad. A little bit embarrassing. Anyway, shall we do a little recommend of some songs to people and then shut up, because it's been like nearly 2 hours.
I know. I wasn't expecting us to be able to talk for this long. It's like, oh my God.
I could talk for literally hours, like just, yeah, put me in front of a microphone and give me an excuse and I'll just go. Right, throw a song at me, Keith.
Okay, so I was looking for some new music the other week. And I'm not a Spotify person, I'm an Apple person. So their recommendations aren't particularly brilliant. So I just kind of went down a kind of indie rock thing. And I came across a band called Glum.
Yeah.
Who have a song called Eating Rust. And I kind of watched the video for it, which was basically just the lead singer in a room who gets covered in what would appear to be some red fluid, but is serenaded by hand puppets at some point during the video. But it's a great little song, and it's just it's very simple. It's mostly just guitars and a drum beat. And I loved it, and I'm kind of waiting for the rest of the album to come out now. So they've got about 4 or 5 songs out already. I think this is the first thing they've done. They've had a few kind of EPs and singles out in the past. So I'm like, this is kind of cool. Kind of like a kind of female-voiced, you know, band. So I'm thinking, this is something new. It's quite nice to have new music in my ears, which is kind of cool. So I really dug it, and I thought, this is great. I love it.
Excellent. Well, you did send it to me and I didn't have a chance to have a listen to it, which has made me a bit sad because it does sound like it's in my wheelhouse. So
I think watch the video version. It's quite cool. It's very simple, but you just go, this is brilliant.
Excellent. I will surprise absolutely zero people with what I chose, because Ninja Sex Party released a new album last week. So of course I've listened to that relentlessly for a full week straight. I had a hard time picking actually which song I was going to go with, and I went with Sports Anthem, which is essentially just a really ridiculous song about how important sports are to people and how he's shit at them.
I listened to this after you sent it me, and my first thought was, this is the most Stacey song I could think of, just by the lyrics alone. And it was like, I can see why you like this.
Yeah, I love Ninja Sex Party anyway. I think they're really, really funny. And the last couple of albums as well, like, not to rag on the first couple of albums, but when they first started, they were very much sort of like two guys in a Casio keyboard kind of situation. Whereas the past couple of albums, they've had the band TWRP, who are another Stace favourite, Tupperware Remix Party, doing all their like backing track, so it's much more like an actual band now, and they actually remastered a few of their older songs with TWRP and released that as an album, which was nice. But the other one I was thinking of picking for today was, I've forgotten, Dance Till You Stop, I think is what it's called. I'm bad at remembering titles, but it's essentially like an introvert's anthem at a party where you turn up and you're like, oh no, I've been here 8 minutes and now I want to leave. it's very much, a Stace anthem, because I am fully a person who thinks, oh, I want to go to a party, I love a party, I want to go to a party. And then after 20 minutes, I'm like, it's too many people here and I hate it. Somebody send help. But highly recommend their new album, which is called These Nuts.
It's got a great cover as well.
It really does. I absolutely adore Ninja Sex. I think this might be like the fourth Ninja Sex Party song I've put on the recommendations playlist. But,
I think if you listen to that Sports Anthem song, you will remember the lyrics straight away. And you'll be kind of just kind of singing them randomly while you stood at bus stops.
Me and my hubby now, like whenever either of us does even something slightly wrong, we start going, you fucked it up, you fucked it up, like, because we're just irritating each other. We're a lovely pair of loving husband and wife, honestly. If you don't have a little bit of comedy ribbon in your relationship, you're doing it wrong, is what I say.
Indeed.
On that note, fucking hell, let's shut up, shall we? Keith, is there anything that you would like to plug before we do a 21 Skidoo?
Yeah, I'll just plug the usual thing, which is the other podcast that I do. And a big shout out to the rest of the Greeky Bummy. What? I can't even call my
Bummy.
Greeky Bummy, what the heck? Geeky Bummy bunch. So we do our own thing off on the interwebs somewhere else, which I kind of do my comics thing every Wednesday. So if people are interested, I have a pull list of the week. So it features mostly the books that I am buying, which my partner shouldn't read because it goes up and down wildly. And then there's a bunch of other books that I want to read that I either get in digital or trade later on, because otherwise it would be too expensive. And then I try and break Twitter every Wednesday as well by putting too many posts out, kind of encouraging people to check these books out, which is quite nice. So it keeps me kind of interested in what books are coming out. So I'm, you know, having a look and hopefully recommending stuff to people that they will discover for themselves and find something they like as well, because it covers a broad range. There's a lot of big two stuff in, because I'm a bit kind of crazy on the Marvel X-Men books at the moment for my sins. but don't kill me for that. So hopefully that would be something that if people are looking for some interesting new comics to pick up, they'll find something in that, which goes out every Wednesday on the Geeky Brummy website or the Geeky Brummy Twitter feed.
Excellent. Well, everybody, you know where to find me on the internet. Stacey's Parlour, pretty much everywhere. I'm still not using Threads and Blue Sky as much as I probably should, because there's too many things and I can't keep up with them. Mostly I use Instagram now instead, because I like taking stupid photos of things. all of that's in my link tree anyway. And Keith, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you again. And, you know, not to be an arsehole about it, but when can I be on Geeky Brummy again?
Hey, Ryan's the boss there. Ryan's the boss there. I can put in a good word for you.
Yeah, go on. Go on.
So we should have you back on, because we could have you in person as well in our wonderful makeshift studio. Which,
oh, delightful.
You'll love it.
Is it cooler than the last one? Because my lasting memory of the last time I was on Geeky Brummy was me turning up in a Rick and Morty Christmas jumper, thinking that'd be, you know, delightful and festive, and then sweating my metaphorical cock off. So
it's slightly better than that. We have tables and everything now. You can sit down. It's all good.
Ooh, I do like that. I love a good sit.
So, yeah. So we'll have to get you live and in person.
I'll have to try not to swear.
we can edit that out. It's fine. It's the beauty of podcasts.
Just bleep it and just have it replaced by the word, like, I don't know, Donatello, every time I say something naughty.
we should do it like when they dub out swear words in other movies. Can't remember the classic examples. We'll just put a muddy funster or something in there for you.
Brilliant. Love it. Right, let's shut up now. Everybody, have a lovely rest of the month. And I'll see you in April, I guess. This is a bad outro, but I'm really tired and then my throat hurts because I talk too much. So I'm going to go and have a little cup of tea, I think, and let Keith have some dinner.
I know, I'm getting text messages to say it's done and ready.
Oh, no. Oh, well, then let's definitely go. Bye, everybody. Yeah. We love you.
Yes, thanks, Stacey. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour. To get in touch with me, the titular Stace, you can follow me on Twitter at Stacey's Parlour, send an email to stacey'sparlour@gmail.com, or come and join the Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour Facebook group. If you'd like to leave a review for the show, please do so on Apple Podcasts or over at podchaser.com. If you like what you heard enough to want to give me some money, which would be quite spectacular actually, you can go to ko-fi.com/Stacey's Parlour. That's ko-fi.com/Stacey's Parlour. The music that you're hearing right now is by the amazing band Starbomb, and you should really check them out on Spotify, iTunes, or on their website. Thanks for stopping by, and I'll see you next month. Mwah!